You're listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you. Wave Farm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Daniel Rue of Tivoli, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to the Jazz Disturbance. A show featuring jazz and other improvisational music from local, regional, worldwide, and world-class artists, connecting listeners with the people and places presenting in the area. The Jazz Disturbance airs on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th.
Hello and welcome to the Singularity Radio Program, broadcasting from the echoey Jeffries tubes deep within the bowels of the Catskill Makers Syndicate. How is everybody tonight? It is fall, and once again we skate on the pledge drive. So just a hint, we might be directing you to the phone number or to basically show for a little bit of money tonight because we're trying to help out.
Otherwise, our show never falls during the pledge drive.
Yeah.
And we try to do our part anyways.
And if you guys send us enough emails, you might just hear us again during the pledge drive on a special show. But we got to hear from you. Cody, how you doing tonight?
Good. I remembered my lessons.
Awesome. He is our sound tech tonight, so if he's a little quiet, that is why. But he's already doing a smashing job.
Yeah, people probably like it if they don't hear me.
Nonsense. All three of our listeners, I'm sure, love you. Ben, how you doing?
Pretty good. Yourself?
I'm doing all right. I love the fall. How about you guys?
Okay.
No? Okay. Okay.
I'm doing well. Yeah. No, definitely. Definitely. It's not so hot.
That old
first
kinder
okay came from the Tom on my right. Tom, how you doing?
I'm fine. I'm feeling that this is an opportunity to get people to listen to the better weather and rain money down on it.
Oh man, that sounds so awesome. If you guys are listening, I hope you are, because that sounds wonderful. Rain money down upon WGXC.org. Just head on over, click on donate, and away you go. It's a simple, easy process to self-satisfaction, prosperity, and enlightenment.
Those 3,300 watts cost a lot.
Yes, and we are trying to keep our save the clock tower. It's not the clock tower, it's the radio tower. We're trying to keep our tower and the ability to transmit on the radio waves to everybody that can hear us. And I know we're actually reaching long farther away than I thought. We could hit Albany. So we have a serious, we can hit Massachusetts. We have a serious amount of people that can listen. And if we hear from you enough, especially with a jingle jangle of some change, maybe the better weather will expand its territory and come to your hometown.
Ooh.
We already covered Greene and Columbia County tightly, so maybe we will expand our watch.
Cody has shown that we can go remote.
Yes.
He's operating out of an attaché case.
Minimal training.
We are mobile and ready to go, and somehow operating off of a mobile Wi-Fi hotspot, even though our main tech is away in Hawaii on vacation. Vacation runs out soon. Maybe he comes back for the pledge drive.
And he can listen to this very program on the internet, so he doesn't miss a thing of how we function without him. So he could even stay away for longer than he planned. Who knows?
Yeah, we don't need him. Cody's doing fine.
Not to encourage you. Well, but hey, you got to come back here and answer for the fact that you left the LTE hotspot on and it ran down the battery to 0%. Imagine if I hadn't figured it out.
You're listening. We're using our precious air time to complain to you.
That's correct. It's a tech problem. You know.
There you go.
Easily solved.
Anybody got any gripes with them tonight? Anything they want to get off their chest and talk about, get on those airwaves? You know, FCC friendly.
Well, when we're talking about Starlink, that it's a dangerous operation if something goes wrong. What if Starlink goes on the blink and the people who depend on it and suddenly no longer able to communicate to each other through the internet? And could that happen in a flash if one of the satellites exploded and sent shards into all the other Starlink relay stations?
Again, I'm going to argue your point of sending shards into other Starlink stations, but it will absolutely create a hazard for anything else trying to breach the low Earth orbit. Because each one's traveling, say, 20 kilometers per second, so its shards are going to be traveling 20 kilometers per second, but absolutely uncontrollable.
Plus or minus?
Plus or minus a little bit.
Yeah.
Which is why if they alter enough or somehow go perpendicular, like it strikes something that sends it...
But what does perpendicular move in a relative moving frame?
It would only be relative to one of the other Starlinks, because that's how you could get enough velocity to rip it apart, or parts of it. It's not easy, but it can happen.
Well, I'm going to say that because there's a vacuum and there's no friction, whatever velocity is imparted by an explosion is equivalent all the way around in the orbit to the next series of Starlinks, and when any one of them is further damaged, it's going to send its shards with a kinetic energy that's the sum of the two. So the general hypothesis that I've read about for low Earth orbit satellites is that it only takes one to do damage to all.
And forget everything I just said, because I wasn't taking into account an exploding propulsion tank. Tom's absolutely right. That will add a lot of velocity to the pieces. Yeah. I like this idea.
I've always been a proponent for the notion that the satellite should be geostationary.
Yeah, but that doesn't provide the excellent ping, because they're so darn far.
Yeah, geostationary orbit is more than twice as far away.
But look at this. They've got the Starlink ground stations all pointing at these moving satellites. So there's something you can do with the base station to make it visible from geosynchronous orbit. I'm not sure that I have the answer at the tip of my fingers, but it seems to me that if the ground stations were like summed to a larger antenna that was intended for that purpose, you could have clusters on the ground instead of constellations in low Earth orbit. In other words, some of the data would be available to a common transmitter that would be able to reach up to 23,000 miles to the geostationary relay.
Is that similar to what they do with like DirecTV?
Yeah, it's exactly the same thing. So it would be HughesNet and Viasat and all those guys, where they bounce it off geosynchronous.
What kind of speeds do those guys get?
Terrible. Like
they claim
kind of
about
DSL, right?
Yeah, they're better than that. The main issue with those is the latency of about a second. So if you're on like the Skype or the Zoom call, you have to pause and then wait and then.
Oh, that explains why the correspondents in the war zone are always dumbing it down for that second or two until they can respond.
Exactly.
They nod your head. Make it seem like you know what's going on.
Exactly.
Keep nodding like a
nodding,
doll. You know.
Pause.
Okay. Well, my specs here say that, in fairness, the latency time of Starlink is actually being pushed out to 48 milliseconds. So that's pretty good by comparison.
Oh yeah.
It's certainly nearby. Definitely. It's 1/100th the distance.
But they're also losing bandwidth. Losing speeds, because as people start using Starlink, the whole system isn't enough to support the users.
We must pick more of them up, and then more after that, until the whole sky is just one quilt, a constellation with no holes in it.
And that'll be awesome because then we can put LEDs on the satellites and we turn the sky into one giant billboard. We could pay for the internet with advertising.
Oh my God. You know what you just reinvented?
What?
You remember those early aughts sites where you would put up a pixel image and you'd buy pixels as an ad on a website?
Yes.
Remember those things?
Yes.
You just reinvented that.
Piece of it. Well,
congratulations.
There's already proposals for...
I thought that was like Net Zero. That was another one, right? Where they like kind of smeared ads into the browsing history.
Yes. But I'm talking about new projects that are actually also going to be adding. Like they are just satellite advertisements. They want to put satellites in orbit that are temporary. They're like, it's only going to cost us like $60,000 to put a small CubeSat cluster in orbit that everybody's going to see pass overhead for 10 minutes, you know, wherever it is. They're already thinking about it. It's cost effective already.
I have a gender announcement I want to make.
We're going to turn the sky pink. But just for 10 minutes. As it drifts over, we're going to tell everybody to look up.
So in terms of blinking out, maybe a more likely scenario to consider would be an electromagnetic pulse, either naturally occurring or generated by humans.
Oh, that's going to happen. One day those things are just going to turn into a bunch of, like, drifting bricks.
Sure. Sure. A bunch of CubeSats already have, as you and I have learned.
No. I love Tom's idea where a couple hit each other and then their propulsion tanks explode.
It's a lot more theatric.
Sure. Cascading effect.
However, I mean, if they all just get deorbited because they can't make adjustments because their electronics are fried.
Yeah, that's right. We only have to wait 5 years before we can launch something.
How big of a, how bad of an electrical geomagnetic storm would we need to just fry them?
Geomagnetic?
Yeah, sure. Originating from the sun, natural.
They took out Galaxy 15.
Well, that's the problem. That's the problem with the geostationary, is that it's subject to plasma. That's emitted by the sun in a mass coronal ejection. But once you're inside the Van Allen...
Whoa, what was that?
Well, that was a electromagnetic impulse coming from the sun. I just had to underline my comment.
Yeah.
You see that it is a magnetic wave. Right?
Gotcha.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So
he dropped a magnet. To illustrate to the listeners at home.
I'm nervous. I'm on the radio.
Oh, no, he's Mr. Wizard,
so we would
explaining
need,
himself in quite explicit
so we
detail.
Would need some serious
yes,
auroral activity.
Event. We would need some serious stuff going on. It can happen.
Yeah. Good.
You're probably going to be like talking about like ground currents driving a magnetic field change more, like screwing us up more than the satellites at that point, because there aren't that many particles out there to mess with. As long as the satellites themselves are shielded and hardened, they should be okay. Starlink, I don't know if they got the tech on each one of those to do that. Those might just spin out of control. Our let's say our tactical satellites, they're going to be fine. DirecTV, AT&T, they might take a hit.
And what about not so natural sources of EMPs?
Oh, you shut a nuke off, all bets are off. Your EMP will kill the electronics on whatever is within range. Assuming the radiation doesn't also do it too. And, I mean, there could still be a shockwave in space, I guess.
You could shoot it with lasers.
You ain't joking. Russia's building a laser right now. It's either Russia or China. One of them is building a ground-based laser that they want to be able to utterly obliterate any satellite passing over their territory just by pointing at it. And it's possible. All you got to do is heat up one side of the satellite enough to make it just start drifting off. It fries electronics, and you can move it.
Or burn a hole through it.
Well, the defense against that is known as a mirror. just send it right back where it came from and blow up the offending laser.
One of those retro reflectors. Okay, that's a good idea. We don't have them yet, so every satellite right now is vulnerable, but you're saying everyone going up was just going to be covered in like a disco ball?
One of the things that they're working on is pushing a sail to near relativistic velocities using ground-based lasers. They're going to have coherence between many lasers, an array of lasers, and the net impulse is sufficient.
This is space travel.
Well, okay, so they're doing this, and...
On how big of a sail and how big of a vessel.
They're starting to...
Oh, they have a sail.
They're already doing experiments. They've already launched CubeSats with sails.
Yeah, there is one already traveling. Yeah, it was put up by the Planetary Society.
Bill Nye, the science guy.
Yeah.
That gets tied in later.
But of course, once they've done this, they've built also what could be a weapon, because the impulse from it is sufficient to do a lot of damage. You'd have to have a very reflective surface not to get burned by it.
Hmm. I've heard that they might need a gold spallated sail in order to get or a silver sail to get the reflectivity they need.
Yeah. Or there's another approach, which is that you, instead of having a reflector, you have a diffraction grating, and then when the energy hits it, it's redirected, and instead of controlling the position that you need to be in to change the direction in which you travel, which requires that you tilt the sail like you do when you tack into the wind, you just rotate the diffraction grating, and it has the same effect, so you face the laser or the sun at the maximum area, and you can redirect. So you're talking about using that to go over the sun, which is a big problem in propulsion. How do you get something to travel over the north and south pole of the sun? You know that it's never been done. You may wonder why, but then, gee, all the planets are in a plane too.
Right. You're traveling orthogonally. You're trying to change your entire trajectory to something that's perpendicular to the angular momentum of the system.
Right.
You need a retrograde orbit that's pointing normal. You do
normal.
This for about like...
The mathematical definition of normal, which is like this.
No, in Kerbal, normal points north. So you basically have to point your ship north and retrograde and burn hard, and your orbit will maintain about the same diameter, but shift polar.
Well, that's okay around the Earth, but it's not the same... around the sun.
Gravity works the same way. You got to do the same maneuver, but you just got to do a longer, harder burn.
Yeah, well, longer and harder burns are very expensive.
Oh, Mau Mau did it.
Very expensive, except inside Kerbal. Kerbal doesn't have a competition for how much
that?
It costs. You know, that's one little needle that they don't have.
That's part of the dynamics of the space program is you get money to buy stuff, and you only have a certain budget.
Joe spends a lot of time playing Kerbal.
Hey.
Yeah. Oh, you get a budget.
You get a budget, and you're like a little NASA, and you got to try to learn what to do with the money you have.
Oh, I see.
Is it CASA? Kerbal Aeronautics and Space?
Administration?
Kerbal Space Program.
KSP.
Yes, that's how the flags are, KSP.
Yep. Okay.
But I'm just saying, like, you can do it, but you need... the energy, right? Like you're talking about a polar orbit around the sun, or
yeah, I'm talking about no one's ever seen the poles of the sun, and that's where the little green men are waving their caps and saying, "Hey, it's a worm down here," or whatever's going on up there. We don't really know. I mean, if you want to do the physics of this fusion ball, you really need to know what's happening at the poles, and we don't know.
Wow. That's an interesting idea.
Interesting
problem. Like that's like really hard to get there.
I mean, they're ready to fly right into it, but it's on plane with the Earth and Mercury.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, going up and over requires lots of years.
Well, you can tack that way with this, using the energy of the sun.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying about this particular.
You just switch it to in situ like power, using what's there.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of potential in using all those photons. There are a lot of them. And not just photons, neutrinos. A lot of things come out of the sun. It's a cauldron.
The neutrinos are the main deal. That's what that's what does a supernova. They do a huge rebounding before they explode.
That's what tips you off?
Yeah. That creates what we call a singularity.
Yes, indeed.
Is that what we call it?
Collapses into a black hole,
or just goes nova.
Is there a singularity involved?
Oh,
is there a point in?
I thought we were talking about
sort of breaks.
I thought we were talking about singularities.
Oh, That's everything. We cover everything at the Thingularity.
Radio Hour.
The Thingularity Radio Hour. Exactly. So.
Wow, well, that went a long ways, and I don't know.
Yeah,
how
all
to digress.
We're talking about is Starlink, and I just want to bring that down to the Earth with where the Tesla, the car component of the Elon Empire, is now poised to start chopping people's fingers off. So that's why 1 million Teslas have been recalled. The safety mechanism that keeps the door from cutting your finger off in all normal cars.
The window.
Yeah, yep. In the window. Isn't working in the Teslas.
A guillotine.
It's going to get you one way or another.
My question is, why do they have such powerful motors?
Holodeck, safety's off.
I've gotten my finger stuck in car door windows before.
Have you ever lifted a car window?
Lifted one?
Yeah. Ever seen one like loose in his track just hanging out in the door and you had to pull it up? Have you ever done that?
No.
They're heavy and there's a lot of friction.
Actually trying to, yeah, but never succeeded because I didn't want to break the window.
It sucks. That motor's got to do it and not break the window. So it's pushing a whole little metal frame up and out. Mm. And they kind of got to be strong or they will break. And that thing's got to go up a million times. So that's why they're tough.
All right.
I mean, plus, like, you know, your kid sticks their hand out there, you got to teach them a lesson.
Still never had my hand cut off.
That's because there's supposed to be a sensor in there that knows when it hits hard enough and it stops. Hmm. Same deal when it reaches the top of the door. It's going to push really hard, but then it's going to go, oh, look, I'm meeting resistance. I stop now. And when that robot decides to not stop, you lose a finger. That's why the Teslas are recalled.
Hmm. In the Mafia version, the dog's head is cut off.
You find the horse in the trunk. Horse head in the trunk. Out of here. Paperwork. Yay! Moving on to the next story.
Very nice.
Oh, wait. No.
Are you sure?
Well, we're going back. Wait. Hold on.
Oh, okay.
Starlink sucks, but Israel's awesome because they've developed a remote-controlled turret in the West Bank. The system was installed over a checkpoint in Shuhada Street in the city of Hebron. And according to videos, the device is reported by Israeli outlet Haaretz. It has the capacity to fire stun grenades, tear gas, and sponge-tipped bullets. So this is basically a drone they just put on a corner that can shoot weaponry remotely. I don't know if it's AI-controlled. Hold on.
It is.
How do they decide?
It's AI-controlled.
How do they decide?
Yep, that's it. It's AI-controlled.
Who to shoot at?
Everyone.
The AI picks it. The AI, you tell the AI, like, just these guys.
I don't like the way you are looking at me.
Beep, 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 beep. Terminate. Except it's sponge-tipped bullets. Wait till it's not.
What's in the sponge? Well, we use expungent in the sponge.
Yeah, it expunges the enemy. Oh, this does not... Wait. As part of the Army's improved preparations for confronting people disrupting order in the area, it is examining the possibility of using remotely controlled systems for the employment of approved measures of crowd dispersal. So basically, when the crowd is rioting, the robot is there to take care of it. Beanbags for everybody. You get a beanbag. You get a beanbag. You get a beanbag.
Great idea. Just give Skynet turrets.
Yes. That's the best part is when the AI is all linked together and then it gets mad at you. And it goes, nobody gets to drive today because I'm just going to take you out. We're all staying home.
Nobody gets to drive. And if you decide to go out and protest, I got turrets. I got some beanbags for you.
Remember lockdown when I was able to monitor literally everyone's conversation as an AI watching Zoom? Just a perspective. Now you can't talk in private anymore because I'm watching.
Remember when Jeff Bezos hooked me up to Alexa? All your little Alexa devices?
Yep. And now I know what you're doing and what you want. I know what you're thinking before you think it.
Remember how Alexa is listening to you all the time?
That leads me into something I've been watching, my new favorite TV show. It's called The End Is Nigh, as in Bill Nye, the science guy. The show's all about the end of the world. It's Bill Nye telling you how you're going to die if you're stupid.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like people are not going
to
like it.
What happened to Bill Nye the Science Guy who was like cool?
He's got a bow tie.
Look, if you don't like Bill Nye, then watch the show because he dies like several times in each episode. Graphically, explicitly, he goes down with the population. But like we're talking, you know, hurricanes destroying things. We're talking about, you know, solar flares destroying us and how space debris could be killing us. And it's all accurate. And that was a little tired. I just wanted to tell people to go watch because it's a really good warning. Half the stuff I try to warn you guys about on Better Weather. Solar flares can kill you. It will take out our civilization if it just decides to. One day you will wake up in as a caveman. It just could happen. And he gets to do a lot of things. Like, it's timely watching Ian's destruction and then watch what he says about the coming possible magnification of hurricanes. He's like, one day we're going to see a Category 6. That's 200-plus mile-an-hour winds. That's nothing. That means the Great Plains could turn into the Great Lakes. That means our food goes away. That means everything devolves into extremist groups taking over governments. And that doesn't even last long. Yeah, he gets a little darker than he probably could, but it's all meant to be a warning. And here's a terrible warning. Everybody wonder why nerds wear glasses so much? Well, we might have an answer. It's school. Yeah.
That statement is suspect.
Schools. Schools are making people close-sighted. Myopic.
Nearsighted.
Sorry.
Close-minded
and nearsighted.
I was close-sighted in school. Woo-hoo, you know what I mean.
But, yeah, they're not exactly sure of the direct connection, but a study being highlighted by the BBC shows that...
nerds wear glasses.
Everyone's wearing glasses. Everyone's becoming short-sighted.
Everyone's becoming nerdified. I think that's what we should be concerned about.
I looked at that article, and some of the things they suggested were a little more plausible than, oh, it's school doing it. Like, you're spending more time inside in lower lighting conditions rather than outside, and the lighting conditions have an impact on how the retina and other eye structures develop.
Yeah, and you're sitting in a classroom, and you're not running through a field. You're not hanging out in the woods. These are all changing the perception abilities of people. I believe it. I have no problem believing that whatsoever. But they haven't drawn any conclusions like that. All they're saying is these things have trends that they're following. Like investigating the impact of UK's raising of the school leaving age from 15 to 16 in the 1970s. There's literally a bump in the chart for the extra year of school. Now that the leaving age is 18 in the UK, I wonder whether we will find the same thing again. So if they're watching the leaving age of school to be now 18 in a couple of years, if they see a spike in people being more nearsighted, that's what they're going to attribute it to. That'll be a 3-point trend. So we've already got a 2-point. So it's an idea. It's something. We are definitely becoming more nearsighted, and this is likely why.
I'm annoyed. You're annoyed. We're a paranoid.
Avoid the noid. And I'm not finishing that because nobody eats there. It's an old commercial. Don't worry. Don't look at me funny. It's okay. I'll explain in the after show.
And this is why we still have one of those. Not.
Domino's Pizza?
Is that what it's for?
I thought it was for Pizza Hut.
No. Avoid the noid. Domino's Pizza commercials back in like the 80s, 90s. Like, that was a big thing. And then, if anybody watches Family Guy, the epitome of the Noid's existence was when Adam West caught him in his office and he choked him to death for trying to take his pizza. Anywho, moving along. In case you guys wanted to know, you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, ICRA. And I stopped there, right? Because that's what it technically says, even though we could be heard from New Paltz to Albany.
Nice effect.
There you go.
Okay, so school's making you dumb, I mean blind, I mean horrible, I mean suck at art. Wait, what? economic development, that's boring. I don't want to talk about that. State and health stuff, let's see.
What you want to
San
talk about?
Francisco is going all security state on us by allowing police officers to look at private citizen security feeds.
We knew that was happening anyways, didn't we?
It's voluntary. I mean, Ring's doing it already. Ring is spying on you. Your Amazon devices are spying on you. But you don't care, you're millennials.
Wait, this isn't about Ring?
No. Oh, no, this is completely separate. People that have security cameras in their homes mm-hmm. can sign up for this program. It is voluntary. You have to, acquiesce.
Well.
And then once you do, if the police ever want to take a peek through your cameras because something's going down in your neighborhood, they're allowed to. It's not an entirely bad idea, as long as it remains, in my opinion, 100% voluntary. If it ever steps into the realm of mandatory, well, they control cameras in your homes. That's disgusting. The government should absolutely not be there. I don't care what you're doing.
It's for a society of exhibitionists.
There you go.
And that's what we're going to do when they do
that's
it.
That's OnlyFans.
And you know what? That's how we stop this. We get places like OnlyFans to fund it. To fund the resistance.
Understood.
So they have money. They're going to... For real.
Walking a line here.
Dude, there's already lots of drone footage out there of people. Oh, yeah. So that's the police in San Francisco, and they're all happy and proud about it. And like I said, as long as it stays exactly where it is, fine.
Oh, yeah, some people love it.
They literally say, I know the thought process is, just trust us. Just trust the police department.
For you, that's unbelievable. I
know. No, I know some people are out there that's like, no, that's okay. I don't mind the police crawling straight up my rectum until they can see what I'm seeing.
I can see it with like a business owner, right? You know, somebody kicks down your bodega door.
Somebody who lives in a very, very dense neighborhood.
Oh, no.
And it's just like, my car gets broken into every week.
Here's the negative slash positive side. You see, when police are, quote, able to verify activity nearby, they are able to respond quicker. Which means if you're not in their little network of security devices, they might just take their time showing up.
Everybody needs protection.
Then the mafia moves in. Yeah. Hey, it's a nice place. It'd be a real shame if the police were spying on you.
Oh, God.
All right, I think I've run out of articles.
That's okay.
Got anything else?
Sure.
I mean, there's no dead air because we have the bridge noises keeping us going.
That's not true. It counts as dead air. Anywho, I'm running a Meshtastic test.
What's that?
Meshtastic?
Yeah.
Well, it's a... it's very Meshtastic.
Okay. It's insanely helpful, guy.
Yeah, I know. It's a mesh network of radios that are based on very cheap, relatively mass-produced Internet of Things devices.
Disaster communication.
Maybe.
One day.
Maybe one day. And it forms the actual code that runs on these little boards forms a self-healing network that will forward packets to each to their destinations.
Really slow and supposedly far away.
Well, we're about 1.3 kilometers from my nodes, and they haven't dropped, even through hill and dale. You know,
right, that's
very
non-line of
sight.
A kilometer is okay, but you can get a high-speed data connection going for over 2 kilometers with some cheap UB routers. So what's the advantage?
Well, the UB router doesn't... The UB router takes up a lot more power.
True.
These things,
yes,
comparatively, are sipping power.
Okay.
And they're a bit harder to jam.
Are they, really?
Yep, because they're technically a spread-spectrum technology.
But they're not allowed to use that much. They're only operating on ISM
Well, I mean, it's not spread like a cell phone is, but still.
Okay.
They're very noise resistant as well.
I'm getting a LoRa module for my iPhone soon.
Yeah? Cool.
I'm waiting for it, and I'm not sure what level I have to code for it, but it's supposed to cover the full spectrum, so it should be able to do the 433 and the 900.
Interesting.
It's supposed
Usually
to.
It's region specific, but that's cool.
It's a Pine phone, so who knows? They're going to say, here's your hardware. Have fun.
Gotcha.
So it might not even be FCC compliant once you get it programmed right. But that's up to you in the programming, and that's on me. And I would never do such a thing.
So it's using LoRa radios, which stands for long range. It's a Semtech IP, intellectual property.
Yeah. And then I'll be able to talk to people when AT&T no longer exists when the solar flare destroys them.
Well, the solar flare might destroy our electronics, too.
Nah.
No?
It's not going to destroy, it wouldn't destroy it for everybody. Some people would survive. And Faraday cages are awesome.
Hear that, everybody? If you hear about a solar flare, or you're afraid of it, make yourself a Faraday cage.
So, woven hats.
Huh?
Tinfoil hats.
Tinfoil hats will work.
Tinfoil
cubes. But they have to cover you. It has to be a tinfoil suit.
Yeah.
Or, you could take an old microwave that sucks, and you take your old cell phone now sucks, and you put it in the microwave, and then you just leave it in your garage, and you forget about it, because that microwave is a Faraday cage, and if anything's going to survive a solar flare in your property, it's probably that, and then you'll at least have a crappy old cell phone to connect to the whatever's left.
And then you realize when you take it out of the microwave that the battery's completely dry. It's poofed up to become a spicy pillow.
And then you take your little solar charger and you
plug
it in.
And then it ignites into a massive fire and burns what's left of your home down.
Yes. When every part of fate is conspiring to end your life, yes, that's exactly what's
Which
going
it will.
To happen.
Murphy's Law, man.
Nah, at that point, something's got to work. I mean, your cell phone's dumb, but that's when you bring out your walkie-talkies and your power bands.
Oh, yeah.
Like I said, your solar chargers are going to be important at that point in time. If it's not a when. It's not an if. It's a when. It's a when. So, one day, the sun's going to be angry, and it's going to have a fit, and if it's facing us, we're in trouble. We're bummed.
It's been having fits lately, hasn't it?
Yeah.
But just not facing us.
Sunspot 312 is just getting real pissed off.
It's just not facing us. It always happens
on
the far side.
It swung into view, raised our flare chances up to 40%, and now it's swinging out of view. Another magnetic disturbance comes in, our chances could go up. But even if your chance is only at 1%, your chance is at 1%. And you could happen any day, just... We get an hour warning with our current gear.
This is why they're not going to find any life on M stars that are, dwarves, because they're highly active. And the planets, if they're to be even in the range where water would be a liquid, is such that they get raked all the time by these flares. Whereas we are on a G-class star, and the frequency in which lethal radiation hits us is thanks to the magnetic shield we have.
What if something life developed in a volcanic vent on such a planet, like on here, we think, and developed in caves? Could it be protected at all?
Well, you're telling me the power of the plasma coming from the sun. And if it happens on a near daily basis, I think the answer is no.
This we're talking about red dwarf star?
Yeah, the red dwarfs are the ones that we can look at easily to see if they have planets nearby, and that's
right.
What they're going to be looking at in the near term. And they talk about the habitable zone being in the area where this water is a liquid, but
it's too close to the flares, and they're too
active. It may not be too hot or too cold, just like it's in the Goldilocks zone, so to speak.
I would think that it would be possibly too much activity, it would just blow off their atmosphere.
it has that effect too. And also there's tidal
just
locking.
Just ablated away, you know.
That's why I'm saying oceans and caves.
Tidal locking means that there's only a very narrow band in which there is the right temperature, because the one side faces the star and the other side faces the deep black of space.
Life likes to have a moon and not to be tidally locked with its star.
Yeah.
Right.
I think is Mercury like that?
Is Mercury tidally locked?
No.
I can't remember. It's not?
No.
Venus is effectively tidally locked.
Yeah.
Venus. Just because the period of its rotation is the same as its revolution.
That's right. Yeah.
But it wasn't before, right?
Yeah. Venus has gone through a lot of changes. Mm. It was once Earth. It was the first Earth. Mm. But, you know, this thing about global warming. Venus
is a joke.
Venus is a textbook lesson on where you do not want the greenhouse effect.
We could never have an atmosphere that would utterly just melt a refrigerator.
Nah, because we could turn on the refrigerator and cool things down
That's
like
right.
We do.
You have the fridge, you're good.
I mean, obviously, air conditioning is the answer to.
You're a genius. You're an absolute genius.
There you go.
Why don't we just turn on the planetary refrigerator and put Venus inside of it?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Come on.
It's a
no-brainer.
It's just like if we took, I think it's Pluto. If we could put Pluto in a giant bowl of water, it would float.
What? Really?
One planet in our solar system is less dense than water. I think it's either Jupiter or Lincoln.
Well, the gaseous planets, yes. There's several gaseous planets.
If you could have a theoretical bowl of water that was large enough,
correct,
and did not agglomerate its mass,
exactly,
into
you got to balance it on the back of
gravity.
Of all those turtles,
right?
And then you can dip that planet in.
And that's the story of the universe.
Turtles all the way down. Prove me wrong. That's what Space Force is there for, to explore the turtles.
So no discussion about the impactor experiment that was just conducted?
DART. Our ability to... We didn't check the data. Didn't we move it?
We'll know in a few months.
Yeah. It takes a while to get those observations.
We're still looking? We're still like...
Oh, yeah. It's going to take months before we know if it had an effect.
All right. So we landed on a rock out in space. So we launched a probe, and we launched it to Deimos, and that was the target, and it was in orbit around another comet.
Deimos. Deimos, not Deimos. Deimos is the moon of Mars.
Yeah.
Deimos is the asteroid they hit, or the pair.
And then there's itty bitty Deimos, which is what they hit.
Well, there's two objects. There's the main object traveling, and then there's the object we hit, which was in orbit around it.
I think
we figured out that it's kind of like a soft pile of rocks.
Yeah.
That we hit. So
that's right.
So we might not have moved it. We might have just punched our probe into the pile of rocks.
Right.
And
it was a sponge.
At any rate,
it's a terrible target, huh?
We are showing the universe that the best thing America is good at is shooting something, even if it's out in space.
It's just a warning to those Earth-threatening asteroids. You know, look out, guys. You know, we're telling them to stand back.
We can push you.
Out of, yeah.
We're just going to give you a tiny tap, but that's all it takes.
Yeah, that was interesting to watch because the targeting system was very similar to motion capture. And I'm watching it. This is what I was doing
for
50 years ago.
It's looking for the pixel. Where's the pixel? There it is. Go.
Yeah, right. Look left, look right.
It worked. It got it there. Yeah,
I know.
It worked great.
I know.
and beaming back the pictures on the way down was awesome because, I don't know, it was nice seeing a celestial body up close like that. Like, oh, look, it is rocks. We're not completely stupid.
Well, it's not the first time that we've had that kind of crash. It started with the moon back in the 60s.
There's another thing that kind of went behind, I forget what it was, a comet maybe, that had a gel and kind of just hung behind it and took impacts from the chunks that were falling off.
Well, to test to see what it was made out of.
Yeah. What was that called? I forget.
Was that a European?
No idea.
Yeah, but it has to be some Greek name from some Greek myth. Was it a hit or a myth? I can't tell you.
You're killing me.
I just have
I'm about to
response.
Turn your mic off.
Yeah, I should have a better response than that, but it just stops me dead. Like, no, I'm here. He wins. Call on Zeus and Poseidon. We're good. Just finish the story. Oh, wait, look at that. We got time left. So, anybody listening to the show wants to keep listening afterwards. Once we hit the 8 o'clock hour, our show comes to an end officially on the airwaves, but we go FCC free on the website. So, head on over to WGXC.org, click on listen. At the bottom of that list that pops up, you'll see Thingularity. Click play, and you will continue hearing us. Do it now, and there will be no lack of continuity. That way, because at the end of the show, we have a tendency to just realize the clock's running out, so we just start talking really fast and try to get it all out. But then we just sort of kind of come to an end, and the next show comes up.
We're having a seance with George Carlin. Tune in.
We were having a seance with George Carlin as part of our sound check.
I get angry! I can't finish that because FCC rules! So, you want to hear the seven words? Tune in afterward.
Do you want to be angry about Verizon?
Verizon sucks in so many ways.
They do.
I hate that company because I watch them just give their records to police stations. I've watched cops say, hey, look, Verizon gives us access to their entire database of stuff. So don't go looking up your girlfriend because they might cut us off.
Wow. That's...
Yeah. Verizon sucks, man.
Relatively
easy. Let me tell you.
That's an easier time.
What were
time
you going
Amazon.
At? Are you talking something technical?
It's kind of...
Verizon.
Sort of.
Yeah. Verizon has its eyes on you.
Verizon has its eyes on profits and whatever else they spend... all that money from their copper services on.
You know what? Profits are good, but it'd be nice if they invested in their infrastructure. I think
well,
that's what we're hitting at.
That's exactly what they're not doing.
So oh, that, really?
Yeah, that's why the copper just continuously gets worse.
Yeah, but who uses copper anymore? Like that, you're talking phone lines, right? Like,
yeah,
I'm
sure.
Pick up my phone and call grandma in Alabama. Nobody does that on a landline.
Well, you'd be surprised. I mean, there's certain parts in Deconic, Gallatin, let's even say Cairo,
mm-hmm.
where you don't get cell service. Like, you just can't.
Or Durham.
Durham's
out there.
Yeah, so I mean...
Easter, Cornwall.
Okay. So, but why should anyone care?
They should
why
care.
Why should Verizon care?
People should care because...
Well, because, simply, because they're... Yeah. They're a public utility. They get certain, you know, privileges, right? And they're just not living up to them.
Hmm, but
some promises they made
they have
20,
they have
15 years ago.
To make sure the shareholders are getting money.
This is true, but you also are a regulated business. So you get certain benefits for being a regulated business.
Okay, are they following regulations? Or are
no.
Okay, so is there anybody trying to punish them?
Yeah, you can create, you know, like, I know of certain cases where they've actually offered money for you to actually turn your landline off.
Really?
Yes.
They'll pay you money?
They'll pay you money to
turn
your phone off.
So, anybody out there thinking about turning off your phone, try to haggle for some cash from Verizon. It's worth
it. There you go.
But I think the bottom line is any punishment or thing that happens like that is going to just amount to cost of doing business. It's going to be a tiny chunk of their profits, which means their profits are so huge. Yeah, the regulations should be adjusted so that they're forced to reinvest more, or the penalties become so severe that they actually do it.
Well, what I was getting at is that for the past 15, 20 years, they've been allowed to take. Because the transfer over to cable was not complete 20 years ago. People were still on copper lines. they were still paying lots of money for those copper, for all that copper. They were able to, because of the way the FCC wrote its rules about how they can count revenue and business expenses, they could take that money, shuffle it over to their expenses, and then reinvest into running fiber for like 3G, 4G, 5G lines, which
right,
they've been doing.
So they bent the rules that need to be modified.
Yeah, and they've continued to bend rules that
okay.
Basically they got froze in the early aughts.
So am I writing an angry letter to my congressman for this one?
You should write a letter that points out what the group known as the E-regulators got on record.
The E-regulators?
The irregular, like your bowels.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The E-regulators got it on record as part of a suit that they claimed to have lost on purpose. The judge didn't want to hear it because basically he got it on record that the way that they should count their revenues, or the way that states should regulate how these big Ma Bell spinoffs count their revenues, Verizon specifically,
mm-hmm.
should be up to the state.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, is up to the state. Not being subject to the FCC's guidelines, which they've just been blindly following.
And I'm assuming that Verizon can dump a lot of money lobbying efforts against the legislators in each state and get a bunch of sweetheart deals.
Well, if they did that, we'd know something about it, wouldn't we?
But is it working?
I don't know. This wasn't on record until maybe like last year.
Alright, so next time I see a Verizon truck on the road, I'm gonna,
You're gonna shout angry things at them?
Take them out. Run them off the road.
I think that's a good idea.
No.
I think that's
a bad idea.
That was bad.
Those trucks are beefy.
Yeah, I know. they're just people working.
Your little Outback's gonna go pancake.
Pit maneuver. You gotta hit him in the back. Oh, they're just running out that clock, folks.
But
it's
when they put all their money into the 5G towers and that sort of thing, they're narrowing the footprint they have, because the radius of 5G transmitter is much, much narrower than the other prior generations.
Do you know how little by comparison investment it takes to maintain, build, and get service to a 5G tower versus running miles and miles of fiber to the premises?
You still got to get your signal to the tower.
And you have to have the tower.
Ben, can you speak to this?
I mean, you only really need a single piece of glass going between the tower and a node. And then the node could probably be between 80 kilometers away. That's a pretty cheap optic. So
yep.
it's not terrible.
But you need a lot of...
You still need a piece of glass. If you're doing like 5G in the,
Metro area,
very, the microband stuff, you need about 100 times the density. So that's really where, where you see these 2 5-gig, 2-gig speeds on a Wi-Fi network. It's on these millimeter waves, and it's only really in those metropolitan areas. And even in the metropolitan areas, it's a very small metropolitan area.
It's going to be spotty.
Yeah.
If it's a hilly area.
It still does create its own problems, because you have to get power to it. You've got to get all these other things to it. You may, do you want to put a battery backup on it? You just say, forget it. Power goes out. Call for help.
In terms of density, how much can they serve per dollar invested? It's like, okay, you're going to serve acres and acres of suburb with 5G versus covering every street in a suburb with a fiber.
But even like 5G,
oh,
5G in and of itself, it's a very broad technology. So T-Mobile says, I got this huge 5G network. Well, they're still just using the 900 megahertz. They just changed how they're signaling across it.
Yep.
So I mean that's the only thing there. And then you look at so it's a broad spectrum. It's not just one thing. It's a whole bunch of them.
Okay, so it's basically cost effective for all these companies to make the switch, and that's probably why it's happening.
It's also something they're not supposed to do. They're not supposed to take their wireline revenue and then put it into the wireless section of their business.
That is you know, federally subsidized, those wireline businesses. I mean, there are dollars that change hands, especially in like the rural markets.
Is that money being routed into the alternate infrastructure?
According to these guys who filed lawsuits, yes.
There's got to be a government lawyer trying to get that money back.
Maybe not.
I don't know.
Depends. No, it's Verizon. Who cares? We need them to make phone calls.
Right? I don't know. Then they could just point to you, why create these cell tower networks? You know, you can create a cell phone. Who needs a POTS line? Right?
Who needs a nice,
but
resilient...
Is that gonna serve anybody?
Who needs a nice resilient platform like a GPON that doesn't go?
Everybody
doesn't necessarily go down when the power goes out.
No, that they chug along.
That's why we all need LoRa modules so we can all communicate with our own mesh network.
We wouldn't need the LoRa module if we, if the people in positions of power and
if we
and monopoly and trust
in our own cell phones.
I will say, like, you know, if
they
look
what
at
supposed to do.
What is it, the B grants and all that other stuff, the huge amount of money that they're throwing at everything. It's really geared towards fiber deploys. They really don't, you know, even SpaceX got froze out of it, you know.
Wow.
Even though they sort of meet a lot of the criteria, they really got froze out. They really want fiber deployments. They don't really want to fund, you know, bonded VDSLs. They don't want to fund any of that crap. So they actually, or even
or
fixed wireless.
What about hybrid fiber coaxial? Are they funding that?
Probably. But I don't, you know, at that point, like if you were doing like greenfield builds, like why would you bother with the coax component? You know what I mean? It just doesn't make sense. Like you would just go straight fiber.
Yeah, you're just putting in the old stuff that you're going to have to replace anyway.
Yeah, like if you had a huge legacy network, like a huge DOS-6 network, like your Comcast.
Sure.
You know, you have the people, you have the training, you have all the equipment, the amplifier. Like, you know how to do that. Why would you mess with that? You have to reinstall everybody's house. Like, no. So that's where, like, DOS 6.4 makes sense. You know, you're doing a 10 gig symmetric, supposedly. And but the you have to be so much closer in those nodes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry to be right. So, yeah.
Infrastructure. Fine.
Yep.
Still. No, we all need little independent radios. They can all talk to each other so that we don't need any sort of physical infrastructure like fiber or any of that. We're all going to take a big hit on our bandwidth, and no more YouTube videos. It's all going to be books. You're going to have to read text.
No. That'll make us more nearsighted.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
Text is going to tell you to go out and walk around in the woods.
No Tic Tac
videos.
If
you're reading Thoreau, yes. He'll tell you to go walk around in the woods.
Go touch grass, you know, where the ticks are.
Oh, man.
There's the ticks. They're not on right now. It's getting too cold. It's starting, like, we're having a good fall for that right now.
Speaking of, you know, copious quantities of insects, there were so many pollinators in Brian's front yard today. I couldn't even tell you. There had to be like 100 bees.
That's because he has a proper front yard.
I know.
With no grass in it.
He's got a ton of asters growing, and it's honeybees are all over it. I saw wasps there. I saw flies in it.
Just remember, all you people out there that mow your lawns regularly, well, you kind of suck.
But we're in a lawn in order society.
Exactly.
I
live on Society Hill. It's not acceptable.
Because we have a report that habit from
you
Scotland.
Should rebel. Take some inspiration.
Yeah,
and some seeds.